By tomorrow, it will be the 58th anniversary of one of the most important events in American history. You know, every generation has something like this. 9/11, 18 years ago or 17 years ago. Then the JFK assassination, Pearl Harbor before then, you know, it just keeps going on and on and on. Our world was changed. Our world was rocked. One of the foremost investigators of this in the country, his new book is JFK, Who, How, and Why. James Fetzer is joining us. He's a former Marine Corps officer. He is published widely on the theoretical foundations of scientific knowledge, computer science, artificial intelligence. Also, he has a McKnight Professor Emeritus at the University of Minnesota at Duluth, and he's done extensive research on JFK and many other things, written extensively. One of our favorites, Power Hour, from way back, James Fetzer. James, welcome back to the Power Hour. Okay, looks like he got disconnected, so we'll get him back here. Eric, just get him back, and just let me know in my ear. It's hard to believe, and it's kind of ironic that tomorrow's Thanksgiving, and it's also the anniversary of JFK. Last year, I can remember, I did not hear much on TV about JFK. It seems like it was getting less and less. I don't know if that's intentional or what. I know that something like 90% of America doesn't believe the official story. I think that's an important part of where we are culturally, of where we are, just our perception-wise in this country, is that we don't believe the official story of JFK. So when other things are occurring, when other veils are being placed over our head, then, you know, they don't seem so unreal. Well, if they did that to JFK, what can't they do? If some organization, some group of people, obviously connected, obviously very powerful and had the ability to reach the president in such a discreet way, then what can't happen? You know, 9/11, what have you. They're telling me we have James back. James, welcome to the Power Hour.
Daniel, yes, bad connection. Sorry about that.
Well, there we go. Well, we have you now, and we're so glad to have you. Just to introduce you, talking a little bit about JFK 58 years ago. That was the day. It happens tomorrow on Thanksgiving is the anniversary. Give us a little background on you were at the JFK Dallas conference here in the last few days. Tell us a little bit about that and about anything new about JFK research.
Well, there are new developments, but it's a good idea to get background for your audience, Daniel. The reason this has been the greatest murder mystery in history is because on 22 November 1963, the American government executed its own chief executive officer. The major players included not only the new president, Lyndon Johnson, but J. Edgar Hoover, the director of the FBI, the Joint Chiefs, the CIA, the anti-Castro Cubans, the Texas oilmen. It was a horrendous situation, and of course, you can't expect that they're going to investigate themselves and come up with the truth. In fact, they've been very active in producing new evidence to mislead those who are sorting out the facts of the matter and coming up with a true account of what happened to JFK.
Give us a little background about that day so people, I know they may or may not understand it. Tell a little bit about the story and where really the source of all these theories start to come from.
Daniel.
Yes, can you hear me, James? James, you there? Okay. I don't know. We're having a problem with the connection. I don't know. This, you know, when interesting things
Daniel,
information.
Are we back?
Yes, we're here. Yes, we're live. We're live, James.
Yes.
On the break, we'll work on your connection. Let's make the best you can. Let's talk a little bit about the background of that day. Let's go through, just give us a summary of what happened and really the source of where all these theories spring from, some important information about that day.
Well, the Secret Service set him up. There were more than 15 indications of Secret Service complicity. Left two agents behind at Love Field. These were men who would have run alongside or on the back of the presidential limousine. They didn't weld the manhole cover short. They left the windows open in the city. They cut the motorcycle escort down to four and directed them not to ride ahead of the rear wheels, which one of the officers said was the damnedest formation he ever encountered. We also had improper parade route. They included a change to the motorcade just 4 days in advance, which they never do, because the Secret Service has to investigate every building and every actor who's involved in the case. And therefore, in this case, they left JFK as a sitting duck, the most important indication being they moved the vehicles, the order of the vehicles, where the presidential limousine ought to have been in the middle. Instead, they moved it to the very front to make it an easier target for the gunman to identify. And it canceled the flatbed truck that should have preceded the presidential limo for reporters to cover it. There was a huge argument between LBJ and JFK that morning because Lyndon wanted to get John Connally, his dear friend and former campaign manager, out of the limousine, but Jacko wrote him on the ground that the chief executive of the state ought to ride with the chief executive of the United States. And thereby hangs a tale. It was in 1960 when Lyndon forced himself on the ticket as vice president to set up a situation where Jack would be taken out and he'd accede to the presidency. Bobby went by the Johnson suite after Jack had already invited Stuart Symington of Missouri to be his running mate to extend a pro forma invitation, never imagining he'd show the least interest. Instead, Lyndon jumped on it, threatened to expose that Jack had Addison's disease, wasn't expected to live a long, healthy life, that he had dalliances, including with beautiful women, some of whom were spies for East Germany, information provided by Edgar Hoover, and moreover said if he weren't on the ticket, that any legislative proposal sent down by the White House would be dead on arrival because in his position as a powerful majority leader, he'd bottle them up. Jack and Bobby were boxed in, couldn't figure out a way around it, had to accede to Johnson's demands. When a wealthy supporter of Lyndon learned of this, he burst into the Johnson suite cursing and swearing, saying outrage because now LBJ would help JFK become president of the United States. Bobby Baker took him into a bedroom and explained what they had in mind. He came out all smiles and said he thought that was an excellent plan. Bobby Baker would later declare in public that JFK would not live out his first term and that he would die a violent death. And Lyndon Johnson eventually sent his chief administrative assistant, Cliff Carter, down to Dallas to make sure all the arrangements were in place for the assassination.
The day of, you know, they're going across the book depository, Lee Harvey Oswald was there, set up as a pat. I mean, 90% of America, when you were having trouble with your connection, 90% of America basically doesn't believe the official story. And they had this story ready, William Cronkite on the news, you know, taking off his glasses, you know, crying, what have you. The whole thing seemed like a setup. Explain that a little bit.
Well, and for good reason. It turns out, Daniel, that the afternoon of the assassination, the major networks were running constant reports with updates on what had happened. NBC, for example, on See It Now, which you can still watch on the Internet, was reporting two wounds the president had suffered. One was a shot to the throat, a small, clean puncture wound, which Malcolm Perry, the MD, who had performed a simple straight-line incision in his throat, had described to the reporters at the Parkland press conference after his death had been announced by Malcolm Kilduff, the acting press secretary, that it was a wound of entry. This was reported widely on national television. A second shot, a wound to the right temple that blew out the back of his head, was also widely reported. In fact, when Malcolm Kilduff announced his death, he pointed to his right temple and said it was a simple matter of a bullet right through the head, which was widely broadcast and attributed to Admiral George Berkeley, the president's personal physician. When later in the afternoon the story started to come in that the shooter had been above and behind Frank McGee, who is nobody's fool, says this is incongruous. How can the man have been shot from in front, from behind? This, of course, was the anomaly with which the Warren Commission had to deal. And those two wounds, both of which were fired from in front, simply disappeared from the account of the assassination. By the time the Warren Commission was done, there were only three shots fired from behind with two hits and one miss. It was outrageous. So there were good reasons why the American public was profoundly skeptical of the Warren Report when it was finally released.
What are the ramifications of this at the time? Obviously, there was no internet. Obviously, the major corporate media pretty much controlled the narrative. What you're telling me is there had to be complicity on every level. CIA had to be involved because they're the ones who we know they controlled media. Explain that connection a little bit.
Well, absolutely. The CIA began infiltrating the media back in the 1950s with Operation Mockingbird. So that by 1975, William Colby, then its director, testified to Congress that the agency owned everyone of any significance in the media. That would be followed by Paul Bernstein's article in Rolling Stone in 1977, the CIA and the media, where high officials of the agency were boasting to him that their greatest successes had been with Time Life, the New York Times, and CBS. And in that era, Daniel, if you controlled Time Life, the New York Times, and CBS, you had a lock on the American news media. It has become only worse with the consolidation of the news networks, because now 90% of all the news on the mainstream comes from six large companies who derive their news from the Associated Press and from Reuters. Reuters owns the Associated Press and in turn is owned by the Rothschilds. So there's a real lock on the American media. This is why the emergence of the Internet has become such a major threat. They can no longer control the narrative. These mainstream publications, even including the New York Times, are losing subscribers. They're having to advertise for the first time in their history. The Times has become so biased that I refer to it as the Langley newsletter. You can get all the propaganda you want from the major networks, New York Times, The Washington Post, CNN, MSNBC. It's really shocking. If you want to know what's going on, you have to turn to the Internet, which is why today now the social media giants are cracking down. I recently lost my blog.
Hold that thought.
A very astute friend of mine has suggested creating a new, more secure blog.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. We're having a hard time connecting here. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Store, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
How well and how fast does Heart and Body Extract work to improve blood circulation? Listen.
My name is Ellis, and I'm 66 years old, and I live in Jacksonville, Florida. 2 years ago, I was diagnosed as having clogged arteries. I had 70% blockage in one artery leading to my heart. They wanted me to go on Plavix, but I refused, knowing the negative side effects.
Heart and Body Extract is a unique balance, synergy, and proportion of herbs reaching from head to toe at maximum absorption around 95% at the cellular level.
Within the first month, I felt a dramatic difference. The heaviness in my legs was reduced, and within 2 months, I felt completely normal.
Your natural organic herbal formula for heart health is Heart and Body Extract. Heart and Body Extract comes with a 100% ironclad money-back guarantee. Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract. Call 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of Slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Hey everyone, Proactive MD has an incredible offer for our radio listeners only. Stay tuned for our exclusive offer that includes a free charcoal pore cleansing brush and free shipping. Proactive MD with prescription strength adapalene can heal and prevent future breakouts. Today, for just $19.95, we're offering listeners the three-piece Proactive MD system with free shipping, plus a free gift, the new charcoal pore cleansing brush. Get this exclusive offer by calling now, 1-800-583-8662, or go to proactive.com and enter promo code radio. You heard right. Proactive MD plus free shipping and a free gift, the new charcoal pore cleansing brush. You'll get all this for just $19.95 and their 60-day money-back guarantee. You're guaranteed to get clear and stay clear, or you get your money back. Call now, 1-800-583-8662. That's 1-800-583-8662. Or go to proactive.com and enter promo code radio. Again, go to proactive.com and enter promo code radio.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
We're here talking to James Fetzer. Really glad to talk to him. He's written a new book about JFK, about the murder, who, how, and why. And he's a real expert. He's been at the JFK Dallas Conference, the sixth annual conference, and been around leading experts, leading voices. Some disinformation, I'm sure, goes on there as the question I have now, James, is why was the establishment so afraid of John Fitzgerald Kennedy?
Well, in the wake of the Bay of Pigs and fiasco with Daniel, he was threatening to shatter the CIA into 1,000 pieces. He'd been played by the agency, which knew the Russians, the Soviet Union, had learned the date of the invasion, which they shared with Castro. So he was prepared for the arrival of the brigade. Everyone knew about it, all the key players except for JFK. So he was going to clean house, even threatening to shatter the CIA into 1,000 pieces. The Joint Chiefs were upset with Jack because he was going to pull our forces out of Vietnam. He was going to be very aggressive after the election of 1964, but he'd already issued a National Security Action Memorandum that the withdrawal of American forces should commence. The Joint Chiefs were upset because they felt we had to take a stand against the expansion of international godless communism. He was already upsetting them because he had not invaded Cuba, contrary to their unanimous recommendation. He'd gone ahead and signed an above-ground chest band treaty with the Soviet Union against their unanimous opposition. So they felt that he was an obstacle to dealing with the communists, part of the problem. We had the anti-Castro Cubans, of course, who believed that JFK had betrayed them at the Bay of Pigs. It wasn't true, but the CIA found it convenient to allow the illusion to linger. Bobby Kennedy was cracking down on organized crime, bringing more indictments and convictions than ever before in history. In fact, just as J. Edgar Hoover was able to manage the members of Congress because he had sex dossiers on them, the mafia had a sex dossier on Hoover, including photographs of him in compromising positions with his close personal aide, President Colson. In addition, the oil men were upset because Jack was threatening to cut the oil depletion allowance, a massive tax write-off they got on the ground that they were putting themselves out of business because oil was a finite resource. And indeed, he was circumventing the Fed by printing United States notes and the theory that it was absurd for the American government to be paying a consortium of private banks interest for printing the currency of the United States. In fact, most of that national debt we hear about is money that is owed to these banks for printing our currency. Jack instructed the Department of the Treasury to print United States notes, which were non-interest bearing, and was, I believe, going to abolish the Fed. These were all extremely upsetting to the agencies involved because it was going to drastically diminish or even take away their power to control the course of events completely.
Well, let me stop you right there. That's everything that happened after. Why were they afraid? You know, it sounded like Lyndon Johnson, they had a plan to kill him before he even got elected. What scared them before he ever got in office? Did they know that he would do this or what?
Oh, no. They didn't think he would be elected. John F. Kennedy's election over Nixon was just as surprising as Trump's election over Hillary Clinton. Nobody expected that JFK was going to triumph. It had a lot to do with the televised debates where Jack came across as very calm, cool, and collected. Nixon, who even refused to have any makeup applied, looked perspiring and edgy. Many commentators believe that, in fact, it was the televised debates that cost Nixon the election.
Well, that and maybe JFK's old man may have had something to do with it. What do we know about that and him getting elected?
Well, the story is that he was in collusion with a mafia in Chicago to guarantee that Illinois went for JFK. I think if you check the electoral vote, he won even without Illinois, but certainly a story that has lasting and enduring legs. The mafia was said to have been very upset about it in the aftermath when Bobby began cracking down on organized crime. Among the many books out there is Double Cross, written by a brother of Sam Giancana and a nephew who explained that they believed they had a deal with Joe. Frankly, Bobby and Jack would never have entered into any such arrangement, but they believed that they had a deal with Joe whereby once Jack were elected, they'd lay off the mafia. When he came into office and appointed Bobby Attorney General, of course, precisely the opposite was the course events would take.
We're coming on a break. You talk about U.S. notes. I have a U.S. note from 1963. Several times in America's history over the last 150 years, America has printed its own notes. The last time was right before Kennedy was killed. Right before. Let's talk about that a little more, the Federal Reserve. Really interesting stuff. James Fetzer, the book JFK, Who, How, and Why. Wow. James Fetzer. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. Getting back to James Fetzer.
Daniel, the book you mentioned, JFK, Who, How, and Why, which has 15 contributors, is the fourth of my collections of expert studies on JFK. Well, I bring together the best people on different aspects of the event to do a very thorough analysis of what's going on. So this is the latest in updating, including the most important proofs that the Zapruder film was massively edited and revised, that Lee Oswald was framed. He was actually in the doorway of the Texas School Book Depository at the time the motorcade passed by, which means he not only cannot have been the lone demented gunman, he cannot have even been one of the shooters. And I also discuss the identity of six of the shooters. It appears the groups who were involved here had each of them their own personal hitman. There was a deputy sheriff on top of the county records building, for example, who fired a shot that hit JFK in the back. There was an Air Force expert inside the triple underpass who fired a shot that passed through the windshield that hit JFK in the throat. After the motorcade was brought to the left and to a halt to make sure he'd be killed because it's very difficult to hit a moving target, during that interval he was hit in the back of the head by a shot fired by an anti-Castro Cuban in the Dow Techs. He slumped forward, and to my astonishment, I learned at the conference from which I just returned, he was actually hit in the head a second time by a bullet fired from the south knoll. This is opposite side from the grassy knoll. As Jackie eased him up, and then while she was looking him right in the face, he was hit in the right temple by a bullet that passed through and knocked out a big hole in the back of his head, where his brains were blown out with such force that the motorcycle patrolman Officer Hargis, riding to the left rear, initially thought he himself had been hit when he impacted with the debris. Now, we have discovered from brilliant new work done by Larry Rivera that, in fact, the motorcycle escort officers gave interviews with Fred Newcomb back in 1973, which Larry recovered and transcribed. They all confirmed the limo stop. They also talked about the activities that occurred where Officer Hargis parked his bike, ran between the two limousines, which would have been impossible had they been moving up to the grassy knoll, while Officer Douglas Jackson on the opposite side actually motored up the grassy knoll, Daniel, until his bike fell over and proceeded on foot. Meanwhile, five Secret Service agents got out of the Cadillac and surrounded the presidential Lincoln, one of whom took a chunk of skull from a little boy and threw it in the back seat. This is the same time that Clint Hill is rushing up to push Jackie in the back after she's climbed out onto the trunk after a chunk of Jack's skull and brains, which she holds in her hand all the way to Parkland. Clint Hill lies across her bodies and is the first to observe this fist-sized blowout at the back of the head, obviously a fatal shot, and he turns and gives his colleagues a thumbs down. All of this was such damning evidence of Secret Service complicity, they had to take it out. Would you believe, Daniel, I organized the very first symposium on the Zapruder film and analyzing its authenticity back in 1996. And I published a book about the Zapruder film, The Great Zapruder Film Hoax, in 2003. And at this conference, from which I have just returned, a group of Hollywood film restoration experts gave a report on how they obtained what's called the forensic version of the Zapruder film from the National Archives, and how they were simply dumbfounded at the crudity with which they had catched the blowout in the back of the head in early frames. What they appear to have done, Daniel, is to blow up the frames, paint it, actually literally paint it with black paint, then shrink the frames back down and reshoot the sequence so that the black paint wasn't uniform and it actually moves around frame from frame. I thought it was very likely that because they focused on blacking out the blowout in early frames, they might have overlooked it in later. And lo and behold, in frame 374, 375, I found you can actually see the blood at the back of JFK's head. It's blue-gray matter. You know the brain referred to as gray matter. David W. Mandick, the leading expert on the medical evidence, who discerned that there was this third shot to the head fired from the south of Knoll, where I adhere to for believe that the shot that distributed metallic particles was a frangible or exploding bullet fired from the intersection of the Triple Underpass and the Grassy Knoll, but that actually turns out to be the third shot that they had. The one with metallic particles was the expanding bullet that was fired from the south knoll, where we even have a photograph of a shooter with a rifle there. This is all stunning stuff.
The Zapruder film, first, let's get your new website, jamesfetzer.org. I didn't announce that because your old website is no more. jamesfetzer.org, and you can get a lot of this, and you can buy James's books and what have you. At this conference, so what you're telling us is that Hollywood experts have seen the original Zapruder film or as much as they could and said, basically, this is a bad edit job. I mean, this is a crude edit job.
That's right, Daniel. Sydney Wilkerson and her associates, I've been to their studio in Hollywood. I've been in their studio. I've seen the version they have. It's unbelievably clear and detailed. They obtained it directly from the National Archives. And these are the best Hollywood people whose reputations are immense, pointing out the crudity with which the film in this particular respect was altered. So they took out 100 frames of the limousine turning from Houston onto Elm because the driver, William Grist, swung out too widely, nearly hit a concrete abutment. That took out at last 5 seconds of film running at 18.3, or call it 20 frames per second. So with 5 seconds, that was 100 frames they edited. And all that I've described about the activity after they brought the limousine to a halt, they had to take all that out. I originally thought it was only 6 or 8 seconds, but I can't find that it was done in less than 20. That's another 400 frames. We only have 487 frames in the extant version after it had been reduced by removing more than 500 frames. So the original version would have been more than twice as long. And interestingly, Daniel, I have four persons of my acquaintance who actually saw what appears to be the unedited film. It included the turn from Houston onto Elm. It included the limo stop. it included the hits that JFK's had, so they had thought there were only two, as I had, until David Manning revealed the evidence that substantiates he was actually hit a third time in the head. All of this was so incriminating of the Secret Service, they had to take it out. It was done by the CIA in a secret facility in Rochester, New York, adjacent to Kodak.
James Fetzer, hold that thought. JamesFetzer.org. We'll be right back. We're talking to James Fetzer. JamesFetzer.org is his new website. JamesFetzer.org. JFK, who, how, and why is, like you said, the fourth installment of his research. It's such a massive thing. It's such an important, just critical time. I asked James during the break, I'll ask it again here. As you pore over this, as you talk to these people and you're looking at the Zapruder film almost 60 years later, I mean, that's got to be some sort of surreal feeling. Does what if go through your mind? What goes over James Fetzer's mind as you research this?
Daniel, it would have been a completely different world, but for the assassination of JFK, we had a whole succession of presidents who would never have held that office, but for his demise. In fact, one of the fears at the time by those who were opposed to him was that there would be a Kennedy dynasty, that JFK would serve two terms, Bobby would serve two terms, Teddy would serve two terms. They had to nip it in the bud. He would have ended the war in Vietnam. He would have shut down the Fed. He would have shattered the CIA into 1,000 pieces. He would have reasserted military control over the military-industrial complex Eisenhower warned us about. A whole host of things would have happened had JFK lived. It's a great tragedy for the world that he was taken out by the very forces he was engaged in what turned out to be, of course, a fight to the death.
Was he naive to think that, you know, he's president and he can do these things and they didn't have such a reprisal against them? Was he a little naive about how strong those forces were actually against him?
He realized belatedly that he ought to have put Bobby at the CIA, that the CIA had grown enormously. It was like an octopus with tentacles everywhere. Not only in the media, but all kinds of covert operations, draining funds from the public for covert action. I think if Jack had put Bobby at the CIA, that he would have survived his presidency because they would not have been able to organize against him in the thoroughgoing fashion that they did.
You mentioned the Federal Reserve. It's a key point. You really believe that he would have made moves to abolish the Federal Reserve?
Well, think about it, Daniel. It's absurd for the American government to pay a consortium of private banks interest for printing the currency of the United States. The Department of the Treasury can perfectly well print the currency of the United States without paying interest to a consortium of private banks. It's a manifest absurdity. It was created back in 1913. It was one of the greatest failures or mistakes in the history of the United States that this happened. It was done covertly in the dead of night. There's a real history here that allowed, you know, the creation of a central bank against which our founding fathers had warned. It would be a great thing to get rid of the Fed. Ron Paul has endlessly called for it to be audited. Daniel, it's just a printing press. They can run as much money as they want. They can do anything with that money they want.
It's insane.
Completely.
And do you know, James, I'm trying to get this out to people so that they understand this. The reason the Fed has never been audited is because of the 14th Amendment, Section 4. So if you ever get, I don't want to go into it right now, but Amendment to the Constitution, Section 4, you read the first sentence, the public debt can never be questioned. And so it'll take a constitutional amendment to ever audit the Federal Reserve. That's another story. Let's get back to what he did. He made United States notes. And ladies and gentlemen, if you go look at your dollars in your pocketbook or wallet, what have you, it'll say Federal Reserve note on the top. Well, JFK was the last president to print U.S. notes. It said U.S. note right on the top, not Federal Reserve note. Was there anything else that he was doing or going to do?
Well, as I was a young Marine Corps officer, I held one of those notes in my hand, and as you observe, it said United States note instead of Federal Reserve, and it had a red embossed imprint instead of green. This really represented a much more significant threat to the deep state than I was even dimly aware at the time.
Absolutely. We got a couple minutes, James. If I don't get a chance at the end, I want to tell you how much we appreciate you coming on and wish you and yours a happy Thanksgiving. In the last minute or so, couple minutes, we're coming to a head. America is waking up in larger degree, I should say, than ever before about what is exactly being done to them. They've been lied to. The other side, yeah, the deep state, the syndicate, this power grab is pressing. It's all coming to a head. That's what I see. I don't want to put words in your mouth. Where are we as a country? What is right upon us?
The social media have taken a political stand. They're suppressing conservative voices and conspiracy research, Daniel. It's a disgrace. They were originally founded on the principle that they would be like bookstores or libraries. They'd make available everyone's own work, whether it was a blog or a video, so they would be responsible for their own work without taking a stand. But they've now compromised. They've done massive censorship. It's absolutely unbelievable. They are taking directions from both the U.S. government and the Israeli government about who to censor. It's been outrageous. They actually had meetings to see how they could benefit the Democratic Party in the midterm election. Now, I'm not telling you to vote Democrat or Republican. I'm saying we ought to have a fair playing field, and that the giant social media has been warping the situation. They have to be broken up. Donald Trump has to do trust busting of the social media giants, just as TR did of the trust in his era.
James, it's an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for your tireless research, and God bless you, my friend. JamesFetzer.org is the website.